Working in a veterinary clinic can pose some hazards. This week, we want to talk about some of the things that we are so over and we want you to stop doing because it's putting us at risk. This week on The Veterinary Viewfinder. Welcome back to The Veterinary Viewfinder, the podcast that tackles the toughest topics in veterinary medicine. And a tough topic is the work that we do, guys. I mean, come on. Some of the things that we have to encounter, endure, can put us at risk. And this week, we want to talk about some of the everyday tasks and duties and responsibilities that we think we need to rethink and maybe try to avoid, or at least make them a little bit safer. But before we start talking about safety and avoidance, as always, I am one of your co-hosts, Dr. Ernie Ward.
And I'm registered veterinary technician, Becky Mosser.
And Becky, you know, this is one of those conversations that, you know, you kind of wish you didn't have to have with the Viewfinder family, but there are so many elements of our job that really are inherently risky, you know? And I think that sometimes we just shove it way back in the recesses of our minds so we don't think about it. And we certainly don't want to frighten people. But Becky, I mean, there's a lot of workplace safety issues out there.
Oh my gosh, there's so many. And I think it's not just for, at least for me, it's not just that they're there, it's that we've become so complacent
around them.
And we are very lackadaisical about some things that we use in practice that are deadly chemicals, deadly gases, deadly ions.
Right.
And like, there's a lot of things on our job trying to kill us that are not patients and clients. And we're very complacent with that. And it can lead to catastrophic outcomes when we're not careful.
Right. And you know, Becky, I used to tell a lot of our staff members, because we were a bit paranoid about a lot of these workplace hazards, right? We knew that there's some things that we could, you know, mitigate, and we tried to. But you know, I used to always tell my technicians and associates, guys, a lot of the things that we are most worried about as quote unquote owners here, I'm now in my owner hat, are the silent killers, the things you don't see, and they're cumulative, right? And so I know we're going to talk about like radiological hazards, but you know, Becky, it's the things you don't see. You're going, how can this be a big deal? I feel fine. Nothing happened. You know, there's no bleeding, no broken bones, but it's really the things that are happening at a cellular level are hidden way out of sight physiologically that worry me the most.
Sure. And if we reflect that to our patients, we have that understanding, right? Like heartworms, you don't see them, but we know that they do a ton of damage. You know, diabetes, you know, you can't see it, but we know what's happening inside the body. And so we have that thought process for our patients. And honestly, sometimes we even go more out of our way to protect our patients than ourselves from things that could do harm to either one of us. And like, it's just time to do better. It's time to protect ourselves. And, you know, we have enough things working against our longevity in this, you know, profession. We don't need it to be our job itself.
Right. Our lives. It's, I mean, there's enough pressure psychologically. Well, Becky, let's start this conversation off with the Viewfinders about the actual thing that kind of sparked it for you, you know, and this talks about radiology, safety and radiology. I mean, this is kind of a pet peeve of mine, but maybe frame that for the Viewfinders, what we were talking about before we came on the podcast.
Yeah. Because it just got my heart sad because I was looking through some social media post, and I don't want to be overly specific, but there was a radiograph that was really cool. I mean, just plain as day, neat to see. And also had full on, I mean, wrist to fingertip inclusion of the technician, I'm assuming the assistant or the technician's hands in the radiograph. So, and it's not even like something that's super rare, you know, I wasn't like shocked and awed, like, oh my gosh, how did that happen? It was more like, oh my gosh, how are we still seeing this? And when I, you know, did what I do and kind of made like a cringy face on the post and was just like, the hands though, you know, the original poster was kind of just like the patient was, we were not able to anesthetize the patient, and due to their size, there was no other way to do it. And I just like in my head was like, yes, there absolutely
there are lots of ways. Right. There are always ways. Yeah.
And on top of that, it wasn't your hands. It wasn't your lead gloves that were included in the image. It was your straight up hands.
Yeah.
And the veterinarian saw that. Like, that means it's acceptable in that clinic. Nobody was shocked. And the thing about it is it's acceptable across the board. So at the sake of, you know, monologuing about it, it's the thing that really tipped me off. Because one, I used to teach radiology. And I would tell my students jokingly, and it's become somewhat of a legacy, that, you know, you don't want to have starfish babies. And so you need to protect yourself. And we would laugh, but it was something that kind of always triggered them to be safe in their radiological procedures. But it's the rarity, and we've got to, you know, protect ourselves better. And then it just snowballed into all the other things we do on a daily basis that put ourselves at risk that are completely acceptable.
Right, right. Quote, unquote. And it's unacceptable, guys. I mean, viewfinders, this is putting right. your health in jeopardy. And this is why radiology for me was one of those things that I was extra, extra sensitive about, because I knew you couldn't see the damage. And guys, just a brief evolutionary biology review here for the viewfinder family out there. You know, when you look at mammalian evolution, it was accelerated by radiation exposure. Guys, that's why like deep sea creatures have kind of remained the same for millions and millions of years, because they don't have the same radiological impacts that cause mutations. And of course, most of those mutations aren't beneficial, but if you're a mammalian species, sometimes you grow an extra feather and you're a better flyer, right? So, I mean, I just want to remind you that that's what's happening whenever you put your hands in that radiological penumbra, right? I mean, and so at least wear your gloves, at least put coatings over, I mean, you know, lead coating over your hand. I mean, come on, Becky, I don't, that's one of those things that terrifies me, because here's the thing, guys, you go, well, it's that one time that we did it. Well, magnify that, multiply that, amplify that over your entire career. And Becky, pretty soon you've got hundreds of those exposures, and that's where the real danger is.
If not thousands, right? It's so scary. And, you know, for me, it is the fact that it's like it isn't that one time, and it is over and over again. And what really scares me is when we think about the number of on-the-job trained assistants and individuals who are working in a clinic who don't know what they don't know. And so they know they should be wearing lead, but nobody else really does. And a lot of times the registered techs that they work with don't. Mind you, the veterinarians are never, in my experience, right. the ones in there taking the radiographs. And when they are, they generally are fully like, they're like, yeah, where's all the lead, or I'm not in here, you know, right, but then right. it's not the expectation of the staff. So radiology safety is just one that I feel like it's 2024. Let's be in our radiology safety era.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. All right. Another sort of risk that we want to talk about that puts us in jeopardy, just in general, handling animals, right? I mean, bites and scratches and so forth. And Becky, you know, I was in the early days of cat scratch fever, you know, so we were really sensitized to say, oh my gosh, please, whatever happens, don't get bitten by a cat, because, you know, we knew that not only was it just going to be Pastorella, you know, and you're going to have to be on antibiotics, but we also knew that there could be long-standing impacts of that. So, you know, Becky, I mean, what about to those viewfinders out there that say, well, you know, hey, it's just a risky job. I mean, you know, yeah, bites and scratches, that's just kind of how it is. That's the risk we take to do what we love. I mean, what do you say to that?
I would say go spend some time in a zoo, you know, because that's the real risky bites and scratches job. And yet they are not getting bit and scratched on a daily basis. Good Why? Point. Because they use proper sedation. They use proper handling techniques. They use proper distance, because it's life or death. But because we are rarely, and I say rarely because it was within the last year, there was a veterinarian attacked and killed at her very own practice by a dog in front of her colleagues. I mean, it is life or death, but at the same time, we don't, and I want to be clear. I'm not saying that they didn't in this case. Like, this has nothing to do with anything. I'm just saying that it happens to right. us, and we don't quote unquote think about it until it is us. And it's just a little bite or a little scratch. There are career ending and even life ending injuries sustained in small animal practice, let alone large animal, livestock, and then zoo medicine. So, you know, so for me, I say, like, if you think it's just part of the job, then you're being complacent with your own safety and your team's safety, because I would push back. There are facilities that could say they haven't had an injury in X amount of time. And there's a reason. No, people, you know, check their ego at the door. They don't need to be the one who tames the cat, tames the bad dog, pins them down, and gets it done. there's no need to overpower the situation. In safe situations, we work with the animal. We make sure that everyone's safe. And that's the number one priority. And unfortunately, that's not the case. You know, we still laugh, quote unquote, about, you know, equipment being more valuable than some technicians' lives. So make sure the horse doesn't kick the ultrasound.
Right. And speaking of horse injuries, I mean, that's like a season ending injury right there. I mean, I know plenty of veterinarians that have had serious injuries from horses that have been kicked and so forth and, you know, trampled and whatnot. Also, Becky, I think we had her on the podcast, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago, a veterinarian who wound up getting a what seemed to be an innocent bite at first that turned into this massive infection. And she lost the use of her hand and she developed a great glove. I think, do you remember that, Becky? Was that here on Vertical Vet?
Yeah,
that
I don't know. If I heard it on Vertical Vet, it might have sounded like here, but I know exactly what you're talking about. That was life changing for her. Absolutely.
Right. So again, these things happen. Another thing outside of bites and scratches and just the usual maulings that we are at risk for, it's just the, in general, ergonomic risk, right? I mean, Becky, sometimes we're bending over at awkward angles and maybe we're not as physically fit as we need to be. And suddenly, wow, there's a lower back injury, right? I know lots and lots of vets who have neck pain, chronic issues in their, you know, carpal tunnel and so forth, Becky, because we're just not sensitive and probably not, you know, prepping our bodies to actually do this massive amount of work that we do over decades of life, you know, Becky. So what about like workplace ergonomics? I think about receptionists up front. I mean, I think about technicians bending and pulling and so forth. I mean, there's a lot of little risk out there.
The ergonomics of our job are insane. It's so true. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, because we're wrestling dogs on radiology tables and they're not made for that. But it's the truth. And we have, unfortunately, the disadvantage of ergonomically friendly equipment being much more expensive. And so when we look at the adjustable tables and we look at the adjustable scales and the ways that we can help prevent injury and reduce stress on our staff's body costs more out of pocket, and often that's the least popular choice. And so instead of having adjustable heights and adjustable tables, we are kind of left to our own devices of bad ergonomics. You're standing on stools, which is super safe in the clinic. So yeah, it's a huge disadvantage. And you're right, our CSRs, it's not something I think that we think about. And in a deal, we aren't thinking about our own. We know it's almost impossible to do our job, but at the same time, do we look at ways we could do it better or we could make it easier on ourselves? And what are the overall policies and just straight up rules? You know, if it weighs over 50 pounds, you get help. If it weighs over, you know, 25, what is a rule and how do you enforce it? Because again, I just find often, and guilty myself, let me please do not be like throwing stones at glass houses. The ego doesn't get checked and you're like, I can pick it up. I can do it. I've got it. And for whatever reason, it's like we have to prove ourselves by doing these things that hurt us rather than prioritizing our own longevity and our own safety.
Yeah. And, you know, Becky, one of the reasons why I also got my certified personal trainer back, you know, in 03, 04, whenever that was not only for athletic performance, but I really wanted to be mindful and sensitive to like all of these things in the workplace. And if you're a veterinarian and you came through our clinics and you were one of our scores of interns over the years, you probably are very used to me going into surgery and showing you how to keep a neutral back position and showing you where your hips should be under your body and talking about your neck posture and all that sort of stuff, you know, to keep your shoulders in alignment. I mean, you know, because I was hammering it into these young students, Becky, because I knew they had a lifetime of surgery ahead of them, right? Hours and hours and days and weeks, cumulatively speaking. And if they could develop some good postural habits, then of course, you know, that might prevent injury in the future. So I would really encourage you guys to study this and to learn how to properly lift. And like Becky said, have rules and boundaries within your clinic. Say, hey, when it's over 50 pounds, that's two folks or whatever it might be, but you really do want to be mindful of this because Becky, I know number one, I know so many veterinarians and vet techs that are at the end of their day, they are sore. They go home with sore necks and backs and shoulders and elbows and knees, right? And guys, that is a warning sign, a clear warning sign that something is wrong in your physicality, right? So it's your job combined with your fitness level and strength and all that kind of stuff. So A, take note, if you're coming home sore and you're, oh my gosh, you need to fix that. You need to start a journey to try to solve that. And then the second thing is, Becky, you know, this can cost you your career. I mean, like, I do know several veterinarians who no longer can do surgery, right? Because they've just wrecked their backs and necks and shoulders or whatever is, but most of the time it's necks and backs, and they just can't do it anymore, right? I mean, you know, and I have this one colleague who started sitting years ago because the pain was so great, right? And honestly, you know, he says there's a lot of surgeries I just really can't do anymore. And you don't want to be that, right? So Becky, ergonomics, risk in the handling arena, that's a big one. I also want to talk about dentistry. I know, Becky, you have some strong feelings about some of the unnecessary risk that we are so over and we want to put behind us. But when it comes to dentistry, because again, a lot of vet techs are doing those dentals.
Yeah, as they should be, as your credentialed veterinary technician should be. I think about the amount of unsafe practices that I see. And I think number one is, and it's universal between surgery and dentistry, is just gassy anesthetic exposure.
Yeah.
But so frequently I see no mask or no face mask. And not only are you breathing in directly, hopefully you have a sealed airway, but so frequently I see people having gassy anesthetic exposure. And then in addition, just the biome,
right?
Just the oral biome exposure. And again, my fear is, yes, your credentialed technicians should be doing your dental procedures. However often, it is somebody who's on the job trained. And again, this is an area that they possibly haven't been properly informed of the dangers or the risks, and the proper PPE to keep themselves safe when performing these types of procedures. And it makes me sad when I see, really neat pictures and photos from people at work, and they're really proud, and you just see this like PPE disaster, and you don't want to be a negative Nelly yet, but you're also kind of like, I want you to have a long career, and this is not how you will.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is not how that works.
And I remember when face shields and masking became, you know, like kind of the rigor of the day, you know, this is in the 90s. And I remember that transition period, and our techs really didn't like it, you know, to be honest, Becky. I mean, it was like, oh my gosh, I can't see, it's fogging up. I can't breathe. I can't, you know, all that. Right. We get that. But we were insistent. And I'll tell you, you know, I love what you said, because, you know, we are usually doing these procedures on the filthiest, most disease-ridden mouths, right? And it's not just bacteria, guys. There's fungi in there and viruses and Lord knows what else, right? So the reality is, when you are sitting there with that, you know, scaler, and you are working hard to clean off that calculus, you are literally aerosolizing so many really risky compounds and organisms. So I think it's incumbent on you to lock it down as much as possible. I mean, you know, I'm not saying you have to work in a bubble, although I have seen on the human side a lot of folks working in those, you know, those bubble looking things. But regardless, you do need to take this seriously, because Becky, you know, I really do. I'll challenge you guys, viewfinders, if you're listening out there, if you do a lot of dentals, you know, do you have a lot of allergies? Because maybe it's really not allergic. Maybe it's a fungal or bacterial or viral that you're being exposed to. I don't know, Becky, but I don't think it's good for you.
I mean, right, exactly. When you're looking at it, this is really gross. But I was listening to a podcast, Mr. Ballin's Medical Mysteries. If you guys haven't listened, it's a really cool podcast. This is really gross, but basically a bunch of people were getting sick in a pork processing warehouse, and it was based on the method they were using to process the pigs, and there was aerosolization of blood. And I'm thinking to myself, like, that perfectly represents what is happening. And you see bleeding gums, and like, you see all that nastiness you're so excited to get off of there. And you're like, oh, that's fuzzy. Like you said, then we're aerosolizing it, but we can't see it. And again, just like the gassy anesthetic, I think and the radiation, we don't see it, so we aren't as worried about it. And those are the things we have to pay particular attention to and try really hard not to be complacent, right? Because they're not visual and in our face like a snarling dog who reminds us of a bite injury.
Yeah, and again, just to extend the risk you were discussing with dentistry, even in the operating theater, there are risks to, you know, again, you know, excessive, you know, expressed gases, right? I mean, so either you've got leaks in your vaporizer and your circuit maybe isn't super tight. I mean, these things happen, you know, and it's funny because, Becky, we spent on our main hospital, we had a nice large operating theater, and I was very proud of that and enjoyed decades of doing surgery in that room. But, you know, we spent a lot of money to get the positive pressure ventilation right. I mean, you know, it has a whole separate system in there, and I was really proud of that because we knew that we wanted as much of those gases to be evacuated out of there and turned as quickly as possible. But a lot of folks don't have that. You know, a lot of folks are kind of just in a room that was set aside and then they kind of over years adapted it as much as possible. But, you know, Becky, I mean, it's a real risk in that room. If you're sitting in there for hours, literally every day, maybe you're that veterinary technician whose job is primarily to monitor surgical patients, you really need to be sure that you're limiting your risk to anesthetic gases because Becky, it's happening.
That's right. And I guess the important thing here to say is, and that is the responsibility of your employer. It is your responsibility to know what you need to do to protect yourself and to not trust just that it is happening within your clinic, but to know what it is you need to do to protect yourself and to demand it. So you hear crazy things like practices, you know, well, we have one radiology badge and everybody shares it. You see pictures of people doing things without gloves and it's horrifying. You know, that's where you have to demand better for yourself and you have a right to do that. And even as far as ergonomics, you have the right to accommodating your needs. And I think it's really important for us as employees to, I don't want to say demand that in a way that sounds negative, but to advocate for ourselves, I should say, in that fashion to make sure our longevity is sustained, because your employer will replace you if you're broken.
Right.
You know, right. And so if they break you, they just replace you and then you're broken.
Right. And again, you know, throwing up the excuse of protecting my workers is an unfair burden and all these regulations. Guys, this is workplace safety stuff. This is your life and your livelihood. So yeah, bring it on, you know, because I again, as a business owner, right, I can argue both sides of this. But for me, I always settled on the side of safety. Because I knew that if I kept you safe and healthy, then you were going to do a better job for longer. I mean, you know, it's just that simple.
That's right.
So yeah. I really get frustrated when, you know, business owners, veterinary practice owners sometimes say, oh, you know, you just sound like you want more regulations. Guys, I want more safety. I want better, healthier lives. You know, I want your job to be more enjoyable and without you fearing for literally your safety, or even you mentioned earlier reproductive health, right? I mean, now you're in your 20s, you're not having children. You need to make sure you're doing things to keep yourself, especially as a female, as healthy as possible, not exposing yourself to hidden radiation danger, so that one day when you do decide to start a family, that everything is as safe and optimal, I guess, as possible. I mean, why take these unnecessary risks, right? I mean, especially, yeah, Becky, what I used to say to some of my staff is like, your life is definitely not worth, you know, the $15 an hour. You know, I mean, it's
exactly,
you know, it's just don't go there, you know? And it's funny, I just got back from lecturing in Fetch, Charlotte. And one of my sessions, if you were there, you know, I talked a lot about workplace ergonomics as far as like, it was a thing about non-cash incentives for workers. And I said, one of the things that you really want to do is make the workplace not just safe, right, which is today's conversation, but also not putting extra tension on your body and causing undue stress, right? So if you're going to reduce stress in your workplace, don't forget ergonomics. I said, we often focus just on the mental aspects, but guys, there's a physical connection here. So if you're all day long bending over at odd angles and you've got to reach up and do these things that are not healthy for you, that's going to add to the physical stress. It's going to directly translate to psychological or mental stress, in my opinion.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I think about veterinary technicians and where our scrubs wear out. And that, yeah. I feel like that's how you know the parts of your bodies that are going the fastest. It's always those knees. You know, we're always bent down or knelt over and leaned over something. And I just hope that people feel inspired to advocate for themselves, to just take a minute and look around and see what isn't safe or what should be improved or what could be improved, and to take workplace safety really seriously. Because one, it can, like, at the, like, about business, you know, like we talked about earlier, it is about business. Your employees can sue you, you can lose a lot of money, but like your employees could get hurt, your employees right. could die, you could die. Like, there is a real reality there. And you know, again, the idea that a lot of the damage isn't immediate, it's not going to be something you see, and it's still one of the biggest risks in the hospital. So I hope we've kind of inspired some folks to take good care of themselves today.
Yeah. And you know, Becky, you can relate to this better than most. And the real issue for me with all of this that we're talking about, viewfinders, is that your health, we take it for granted till it's taken away. And, you know, Becky, I mean, you in an instant, through no fault of your own, had your life just completely upended, right? I mean, you went from being a very strong, vibrant person, you could walk and run and do it and all the stuff, and to literally being wheelchair bound. I mean, well, not even wheelchair, you were laying down. You couldn't even get, wheelchair was a big step, you know? And so that's really why I think this is an important conversation, because all of this stuff, like, you know, your hands in the radiology, that's no big deal until it's a huge deal. And that's really what we want to avoid. We don't ever, I don't want this for anybody. I don't want this to kind of pop up. And you know, and I truly hope, I mean, I've done nothing but work in this area my entire life. I mean, since I was a kid. And I do worry about that, Becky. I do worry about it. You know, I was a little kid, you know, bathing dogs, and I'll be honest with you, I was, you know, cleaning kennels, and we were not reading the instruction labels. You know, I mean, I can tell you, no. I was told certain ways to put Rocal in the mop bucket, and it was not safe. And I inhaled a lot
based
of that
on
stuff.
Color.
Right. Well, and smell. And the reality is, you know, I do know that I've been exposed repeatedly, you know, for most of my life. And I do worry about those things, but I also worried about it enough that whenever we were able to own our own clinics, that was something that we said, you know what? No, we're not going to be mixing up the disinfectants except for exactly the way we should. And even then we were very selective on that. So, you know, Becky, anything else you want to leave with today? I mean, you know, I think we've talked about some of the things that are scary, but the great news is you can probably fix a lot of this. You can mitigate risk.
Yeah. And to that point, a lot of times we talk about workplace culture. And then when you see us out and about in public, or you send emails or you send messages, you tell us, you know, we always talk about culture, but how do you change workplace culture? Number one way to show that you care about your employees is keeping them safe.
Yeah.
And so one great way to improve your culture is to show your team that you care about them and that you want them to be safe, and inspire them to take care of themselves. Because if they think you don't care enough to protect them from radiation, you know, why should they think that you care enough to protect them from, you know, just being broken life? You obviously don't care about them that much, because you're putting them in dangerous, unsafe, possibly deadly situations, right? So if you want to think of one thing to do to improve culture, safety can absolutely be a place to start.
Ooh, I love that. Well, viewfinders, share with us some of the things that are a little bit risky in your practice life that we're so over, we need to just move beyond and get better and improve. We'd love to hear from you. Becky, how can they share some of those workplace hazard stories with us?
You can post your x-rays with your hands in them over at Facebook, Veterinary Viewfinder at Facebook and Instagram, or you can email them to me and I'll post them for you at veterinaryviewfinder@gmail.com.
I love that, guys. Be safe out there. And you know what? Today, just go through the day and identify those things that you feel are a little bit risky or potentially injurious, and say, you know what? I'm going to start working on that. Fix that and then move on. Guys, before you know it, your workplace will be a very different place. Guys, we cannot wait to talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.